The first case on the Northern Panel's oral argument schedule for November 13th is Fleetwood Corporation versus Town Trust, case number 60866. Ms. Litter, Mr. Goodenow, you ready to go?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Debbie Leonard on behalf of Appellant Fleetwood Corporation. I wish to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. With the post-judgment order, the District Court failed to follow the most basic rules of contract interpretation. Had the District Court followed those rules, the Court would have reached no other conclusion that Dorothy Town intended to grant to Fleetwood her surface rights for the duration of the master lease. Fleetwood's arguments can be distilled down to 3 points. The first is that the District Court failed to look within the four corners of the master lease in reaching the post-judgment order. Had the District Court done so, it would have found that there is no ambiguity as to the term surface resources in the master lease. Beyond the language of the lease, the facts in the record and the law all support Fleetwood's interpretation of this term. The second point that I will raise is that with the post-judgment order, the District Court rewrote the terms of the master lease. Where the parties had used the term all in the granting language, the District Court substituted the words vegetative and other natural resources, which leads to Fleetwood's third point, and that is that the post-judgment order creates an absurd interpretation of the master lease. This is underscored by inconsistencies within the document itself and also the irreconcilable land use conflict that is created by the post-judgment order.
Ms. Leonard, your three arguments don't address a threshold question, and that is whether or not this case should even be heard by us. Is this post-judgment order properly an order under Rule 3 that we should be considering?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so as a threshold argument, how did the post-judgment order alter the party's rights and make you an aggrieved party?
Certainly, Your Honor. The post-judgment order altered Fleetwood's rights by circumscribing the rights that were conferred in the judgment. The judgment conferred to Fleetwood all of the surface resources in the east side and the west side properties. For the first time in the post-judgment order, the District Court limited the rights conferred in the judgment to just vegetative and other natural resources. This falls squarely within Rule 3A(b)(8), and we believe that the Court has jurisdiction because of that. So turning to the 3 points that the substantive parts of Fleetwood's appeal. First, the District Court failed to follow the most basic rules of contract interpretation. Nowhere in the post-judgment order did the District Court look within the lease itself. And as to the term surface resources, there's no ambiguity. We start with the granting language, and the grant says that Dorothy Town granted all of her rights in the surface and geothermal resources. Dorothy Town would not have used the word all if she had meant to grant something less than all of her rights. The parties also use the term surface rights and surface resources interchangeably, and we look to the sublease, which was attached to the master lease, expressly incorporated into the master lease, and approved of by Dorothy Town, to see that the rights, which identifies the rights conveyed to Fleetwood as being surface rights. Importantly, in Section 11F of the sublease, Fleetwood reserved unto itself the rights to develop the land and resource for any purpose. Dorothy Town would not have approved of this language had she not intended that the grant to Fleetwood include the right to develop the land and resource for any purpose. To the extent that the court believes that the master lease is ambiguous as to this term, the extrinsic evidence likewise supports Fleetwood. First is a letter from Dorothy Town to Fleetwood's principal, Jay Woodworth, in which she says, "I just want you to have the freedom to develop the land. Again, Dorothy Towne would not have used the language if she had not intended for the surface rights to be granted in the master lease. The second piece of extrinsic evidence is that in 1999, 8 years after the master lease was executed, Dorothy Towne and Fleetwood negotiated for the return of the east side surface rights to Dorothy Towne. Dorothy Towne would not have been negotiating for the return of something that she already believed she had. So whether within the document or outside the document, it's clear that Dorothy Towne intended to grant her surface rights for the duration of the master lease and believed that she had granted the surface rights for the duration of the master lease.
But in the original order, the district court indicated that Dorothy Towne retained surface rights that were not included within surface resources. What did that mean, and why didn't you appeal that?
That order was subsequently rejected by the district court in the judgment, and we see this in a number of ways. One is that the trust submitted a proposed judgment to the district court that included that language, and the district court rejected that and adopted Fleetwood's language in the judgment that didn't have any limitation as to the term surface resources. Additionally, that order that you describe was looking backwards. In the trial, the trust had sought to terminate the master lease because Fleetwood had not paid the east side taxes. Fleetwood asked the court that to the extent that the court were to award back taxes to the trust, that an offset be, that the amount of the income received by the trust from the east side properties offset the damages for the unpaid taxes. That was the only issue that was before the district court at that time. The district court was looking backwards, not forwards. And in fact, if you look at the lease, at that order in May of 2011, you see that the district court was concerned that there had not been what the district court perceived was no demand made by Fleetwood for the east side income. The district court was hesitant to disgorge income received by the trust for the east side properties in what it believed was the absence of a demand. And so that presumed that that Fleetwood would, going forward, make such a demand on the trust, which in fact Fleetwood did. So again, this order was looking backwards, and in fact had Fleetwood appealed from the judgment with which contained the language that Fleetwood wanted, there would have been no issue that was before the court because the district court had rejected the earlier language when it ultimately issued the judgment.
This is confusing to me, at least, so I'm going to try it another way. I'm reading from 95 and 96 in the record, and I'm quoting the court. It says, the master lease provides that surface resources were granted to Fleetwood and that all non-granted rights were retained. Thus, those surface rights that are not resources were retained by Dorothy Towne and are now retained by the trust. The facts here are simply that Dorothy Towne and the trust received income from certain surface properties that did not involve surface resources. Thus, she did not wrongfully retain income from the resource belonging to Fleetwood. I'm not sure what this describes, but what the judge seems to be saying is that certain surface certain resources were retained by Dorothy Towne. What are those?
Well, we believe that for the duration of the lease, there were no surface resources retained by Dorothy Towne. But that order...
I understand that, but that gets back to my earlier question. Your position, as I understand the arguments in your briefs, is that the word all encompassed a transfer of everything. This language in the order seems to contradict that interpretation.
I don't disagree with you as to that, but the district court...
So the absence of an appeal of that point renders that issue, it seems to me, resolved and against your client?
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree with that, and here's why. Again, that order was looking backwards. It was looking at only a narrow issue as to the offset.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, the judgment, with the judgment, the district court rejected that language after the trust offered that to the court in a proposed judgment. Also, to the extent that order infused any ambiguity into the judgment itself, the post-judgment order would solve that ambiguity, and the case laws that we cited in our reply brief allows for the time to appeal to run from the order that resolved the ambiguity, which is exactly in line with the intent, with the...
So as to that argument, then, assuming for the moment that the panel agreed that the time for appeal began to run anew, would it run anew as to the entirety of the judgment or only as to the ambiguity that the court resolved in the post-judgment order?
It ran anew only for that specific issue, because it's only encompassed by the language in the post-judgment order that addressed that issue.
So that calls into question then the court's determination that, or apparently absence of any discussion about a resolution, I should say, of the of vegetation and grazing rights, grazing revenue.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand your question, Your Honor.
Let me rephrase that. The court appears to have interpreted surface resources as vegetative surface resources.
Yes.
And limited its interpretation to that.
Right, and there's no language that of any to that effect in the judgment at all, and that's the substantive alteration of Fleetwood's rights in the judgment that started the appeal clock ticking again.
So what are you asking this panel to do, assuming that we felt jurisdiction was appropriate and we entertained this post-judgment order?
That as a matter of law, this court issue an order that Fleetwood has the surface, has Dorotheytown surface rights for the duration of the master lease, that the court reverse the post-judgment order, that the court order the trust to turn over the income and control of the east side properties for the time in which Fleetwood made a demand on those for that income and going forward, and that would be what we would request. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time.
Okay, Ms. Leonard.
May it please the court. My name is Rue Goodnow. I represent the respondent, Dorotheytown Trust, Justices Hardestein, Sherry, and Perigary. I'm going to start with the jurisdictional issue, which I think is the critical issue in this case. The practical effect of Fleetwood's argument is to open up a new way to appeal a final judgment after the time for appeal has expired. NRA Nevada Rule of Appellate Procedure 4A1 says you have 30 days. This is a jurisdictional, according to all this court's precedent. So we have the dates in mind. On May 19, 2011, the district court entered its post-trial order, finding that, quote, those surface rights that are not, quote, resources, end quote, were retained by Dorotheytown and are now retained by the trust, end quote. On November 18, 2011, the court entered a judgment that Fleetwood submitted, which stated that Fleetwood is entitled to the surface resources of the parcels that are the subject of the master lease. The judgment states that it made findings in the May 19th order. That's in the record at Volume 6, Joint Appendix 0996. The findings include a finding that Fleetwood cannot offset the taxes with income the trust received from the east side. The deadline to appeal was December 18, 2011.
Well, that paragraph goes on to clarify specific years from 2004 through 2010 at line 10 of the judgment. As counsel has argued a moment ago, why doesn't that offset determination by the district court conclude with 2010 and that income earned thereafter is then available to Fleetwood?
I don't think the judgment changed the order, which it incorporates. The order was appealable. It was a final determination. The judgment simply uses the same terms that the order has already explicated. That is the surface resources. It was very careful in making findings about those. It had both findings of fact and findings of law.
Well, Mr. Goodnow, it is confusing to me, even if the order is included, as to what is meant by the term surface resources and what rights were retained by town in the findings incorporated into the order. I find it interesting. Fleetwood says this is clear and unambiguous. You argue it's clear and unambiguous, but I have to admit it's hard for me to discern from the leases and the information that's been provided to us what is meant by the surface resources that Fleetwood's entitled to in the judgment, or equally important, what rights were retained by town. Didn't the post-judgment order resolve that, and if so, did it alter the party's rights?
I don't think the post-judgment order altered the party's rights, Your Honor. I think it was consistent with the earlier order and the judgment. The fact that Judge Flanagan quotes his earlier order in the post-judgment order indicates that he believed it was consistent. It is consistent. Whether or not we agree at this late date in the proceeding, this is the fourth time I've stood before the court on this case, that it is a difficult lease to understand, does not mean that the determination that Judge Flanagan reached in 2011 in his order and his judgment was difficult to understand. It was clear, and it was supported by the record. And the fact that the consequences of that are difficult to accept doesn't change the fact that it should have been appealed from at that point in time after the judgment was entered. The order itself, it was dressed up as a post-judgment remedy to ask for the payment of pasture rent. And what it was, in actuality, was a collateral post-judgment attack on the very clear terms of Judge Flanagan's order that discussed in some detail his findings as to what were surface resources and the fact that Mrs. Town and her trust retained everything else other than those things.
Is Fleetwood entitled to income from grazing rights as a result of the post-judgment order?
Fleetwood would be entitled to receive the proceeds of grazing if it is based upon vegetative resources. Unfortunately, Your Honor, this case, and it goes back to my most recent comment about it, you don't see in the record any evidence about whether or not the pasture rent was for grass, the grazing of grass that was there, or simply a description of a place to put cattle and then feed them with hay that came from somewhere else. That's because this isn't really about pasture rent. This is about an attack on the terms of the underlying judgment.
Well, at JA 1116 of the record, quoting the court, it says, Fleetwood seeks a determination that the trust must remit monies from the rental of surface resources it claims under the geothermal lease and sublease, the trust denies that Fleetwood has any right to the rental income from houses and billboards on the east side property under the lease and sublease. Both are right. No mention is made about grazing rights at all in that comment by the court.
If you look back at the letters that are included in the record, the letters address and a lot of the briefing addresses Mr. Clark's testimony during trial that the trust was receiving some payments for pasture rent. And that's that's the hook that was used to get to this stage in the post-trial enforcement order, the post-judgment enforcement order. I thought Judge Flanagan's statement that both are right was right on the money. There is a difference between the limited surface resources that he determined, based upon the evidence and the law, were granted to Fleetwood, and the retention of all other rights under the lease in favor of Dorothy Town and now her trust. I don't know whether I answered your question, Your Honor.
I must confess I'm still confused, speaking only for myself, about what rights Town retained when the lease says all rights are being conveyed.
And let me go to that, Your Honor. That's not what the lease says. It doesn't say just that all rights are conveyed. It is important to read the entire term of the granting language, which is Clause 1 of the Master Lease, and also the provisions of Clause 3 of the Master Lease, which address it. Best record site I have is Volume 6, page 1021, and then following 1022, the Reservation of Rights. And in the grant, there are two clauses that in that first sentence. The first contains the grant of all of landlord's rights to the geothermal and surface resources, the terms we're talking about here, and then to the lands identified in the attachment. And then it also contains the limitation coextensive with the rights to be granted under the lease attached as Exhibit B. That's the geothermal sublease. And so the grant is limited by the terms of the geothermal sublease. And Dorothy Town wasn't leasing this property to her son. She didn't just deed it to him, which she could have done if she were giving him everything. She leased him just enough to give it to the developer of the geothermal resource so that he could lease it to them and get the revenue from it. The statement was made a little while ago in Fleetwood's opening that the lessor retained all those rights. Well, in the master lease, Dorothy Town retained all of the rights of the lessor. And we go to Clause 3 to look at that. That's page 1022, where it says, landlord reserves all rights in the leased premises not expressly granted to tenant. Landlord further reserves all of the rights of lessor as established in the lease attached hereto as Exhibit B, with the exception of the right to receive funds. So the grant is not so all-encompassing as Fleetwood argues today, and Judge Flanagan understood that. He'd heard the entire trial testimony and the presentation, and he ruled correctly, I think, on that issue. Your Honor, I am prepared to address the underlying interpretation issues, although I think we migrated to that. A couple of things that I want to finish up with on this jurisdictional issue. Fleetwood's brief at page 6 relies upon a single Nevada case, Gum versus Maynard, 118 Nevada 912. It talks about several cases from other jurisdictions which deal with changes in prior decisions, but I don't believe that's what happened here. Gum involved a post-judgment adjudication of competing medical lien holder claims to proceeds from a personal injury action. The rule of decision from Gum that is related to our case today is that a special order is appealable. This court said in Gum that a special order must be an order growing out of the judgment previously entered. In analyzing this rule, the court observed that the mere fact that the order in point in time is made after final judgment has been entered does not make it appealable. It must affect the rights of the parties growing out of the final judgment. Relating Fleetwood's request to Gum here would be like the plaintiff in Gum asking this court to increase the amount of the judgment on appeal of the special order adjudicating the lien rights. If the practice Fleetwood adopts here is encouraged to continue, parties may reopen any judgment by simply attacking portions of the judgment or findings when they apply for post-judgment enforcement remedies that courts refuse to grant because the request is in excess of the scope of the judgment. In summary, on the jurisdictional issue raised in the trust's motion to dismiss, this appeal is about a dispute over the scope of the lease and the appeal of the court's determination of that judgment is late. I'd like to address briefly the due process claim. Fleetwood filed the motion to enforce judgment, asking the district court to award all income that the trust receives from surface uses of the Eastside properties. When the court refused, Fleetwood argued in this appeal that the court's refusal violated its due process rights because the district court did not provide adequate notice that it would reject the request. There's no due process violation here. In Johansson versus 8th Judicial District Court, 124 Nevada 245, the case cited in Fleetwood's opening brief, we see demonstrated the defect in this argument nicely. In that case, this court, on a special writ, overturned the district court's sui sponte issuance of a gag order. In our case today, Fleetwood brought this issue to the district court by filing their motion. The court didn't act sui sponte. I want to go back just briefly to the contract interpretation issue for a moment. Fleetwood's interpretation would mean that the trust reserved nothing in the lease. And I just read the portion of the lease, which clearly indicates something was reserved, and Justice Hardesty's question earlier went right to the heart of that. It would render the provisions of the lease meaningless. It would constitute a fee simple grant. That would really and truly constitute an impairment of the property for all time, so long as the lease lasts, nobody could develop it. At trial, I asked Mr. Woodworth, what did you understand the purpose of the lease to be? Mr. Woodworth answered, the purpose of the lease was to get lease to Fleetwood Corporation, which in turn would sublease a parcel of the land to Far West at the time to develop a geothermal resource and supply energy for electricity to Sierra Pacific. That's all this lease was for. It wasn't a grant of all of the rights to the property.
Okay, thank you.
Your Honors, I'd like to start by pointing the court to the judgment in which the district court said Fleetwood is entitled to the surface resources of the parcels that are the subject of the master lease, including surface resources in parcels 7 and 8 of the Eastside property, but not on parcels 6 and 9. The trust's argument with regard to the reservation in the master lease have already been rejected by the district court. When that language ended up in the judgment, the time for the trust to appeal from that language, which rejected the reservation, was after the judgment was entered. And it's too late for the trust to now raise that argument. Turning to paragraph 7 of the judgment, although Fleetwood is entitled to the surface resources identified in the master lease, Fleetwood is not entitled to offset any damages that accrued to the trust for the east side taxes with the income that the trust has received from the surface resources from 2004 through 2010. That statement in the trust recognizes that the income received by the trust is for surface resources. And so this language in the judgment rejected the earlier order, and for that reason, Fleetwood's appeal from the post-judgment order is timely, and this court has jurisdiction. Additionally, I think it's important to note that the trust counsel could not delineate who has what after the post-judgment order. And that's a critical issue here, is that the post-judgment order creates an irreconcilable land use conflict. Neither party knows what they have. There's a stalemate. Nobody can develop the property. Fleetwood has the dirt, the sand, the gravel, the vegetation, and the trust presumably has the structures that exist there right now. What happens if somebody wants to develop the property? What happens if Fleetwood wants to excavate its dirt from underneath the existing structures? The master lease tied together the grant of the surface rights with the obligation to pay property taxes. After trial, Fleetwood is obligated to pay the property taxes, and with the post-judgment order, must pay property taxes on lands over which it has no control and improvements over which it receives no income. This is an absurd interpretation of the contract that cannot be maintained on appeal. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Leonard. Mr. Goodenow, thank you for your excellent arguments here today and your briefing. The case will stand.